You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein, Spike O'Neill, Mr. Official Resignation. Isn't that right, Spike? Isn't that what we say?
Far too often, my friend.
Always threatening to quit.
Always. Got letters on file right here, ready to drop at a moment's notice.
Every day. Oh. I've had enough of this place. I'm done with it. Hey, this city council official resigning. I think this is a bigger deal than people are making it out to be, Mr. O'Neill. I think this guy, on the surface, you say to yourself, okay, well, this makes sense. But this is kind of what's going on across the country, and here we see it happening locally. Do you want to break it down for us, Spike? What happened
with
this guy?
Sure. This is the Sammamish Planning Commission. A member resigned on Monday, after making homophobic comments. Mm-hmm. During a public meeting, and the gentleman in question, Wasim Fayed, a member of the Planning Commission, asserted that the members of the LGBTQ plus community are promoting diseases and infestation into the minds of our kids in school. So,
yeah, his exact quote is a little bit more. I mean, if you really got to sink your teeth into it, you know what I mean, Spike, to really appreciate it for what it is. He said that members of the LGBTQ plus community are, quote, promoting diseases and infestation into the minds of our kids in schools. And then he went on to say, quote, God created us as a male and a female, and to go against the creation of God and to spread diseases in the community is something that we should speak up against.
Yeah.
Now, it's rough, right? It's a little tough. Chris, quick question. Do we actually have the audio of him saying
this?
Yeah,
we have the audio, and there's a little – cut about a minute because there's the context. I mean, he's – kind of making a point at the beginning, and then he goes off the rails. If you want to hear the whole thing,
okay, yeah, let's listen to it.
Certain people who choose a certain lifestyle and say they are among the minority, I don't believe that is the right thing. And I'm going to be very specific: the LGBT community, and specifically creating a Pride Month for them. These are some of the most wealthy, the most connected people. I had a person who reported to me at Microsoft. He left Microsoft for a job to be an activist in that community that pays double what he was making at Microsoft. So these are not a minority people who are disenfranchised, and then we need to club them as part of the minority people. So in my opinion, these are people that are promoting diseases and infestation into the mind of our kids in schools. So we as a community, we should stand up for this. And that's my belief, and that's where I come from.
So, I mean, you know, the easy thing to do here is to say this guy's a bigot and he should resign, and that's the end of that. I think the harder thing to do is to say, how do we make this a teachable moment for somebody who, outside of this, my understanding is, has a pretty okay record doing their job on the Planning Commission, right?
Yeah.
I just feel like we now live in a society where if somebody has an opinion like that, we automatically go, well, you need to be shunned from society. I'm the kind of human being, even though I disagree with the guy, I still think that his talking points, for however truncated and unoriginal they are, he should still be involved in the conversations that we have. They're bigoted, they're wrong, but that's what discourse is for. And when we push someone like that to the side and we say, well, you're going to resign and then the mayor's going to accept your resignation, nobody really learns anything other than people who have fears or suspicions, or maybe they're confused about gay people or trans people. It just reaffirms their prejudices about that group. And they say, well, look at what you can't talk about, right? Look, the alphabet mafia strikes again, and this Orwellian, even though it's really Huxleyan, but it's Orwellian because he's being censored and he can't actually share his opinion, and we see what's going on because the alphabet mafia runs the country, right? I mean, this is where people get those talking points.
Yeah. You know,
instead of like, you know what would be really beneficial is if someone would have talked to the guy during a public meeting, and uh-huh. they talked about how his talking points were, one, unoriginal, too, that we basically was a, like a word salad of anti, you know, LGBTQ jargon that he largely picked up on Facebook. But three, that this is something that he could learn from it and he can be corrected, right? This is something that someone can advance from. He's not stuck in that position of being a bigot. He can, people can learn and they can develop. And I think it's, it behooves us to have empathy and kindness for people like Wasim Fayed, who culturally it makes sense why he would think this way. And it behooves us to try to help somebody and extend the hands of charity and kindness rather than say, get out of here, you bigot, you don't belong here.
I love this sentiment behind your don't just kick somebody to the curb point of view on this. It's a teaching opportunity, maybe a teaching opportunity missed because we were so quick to say, that's it, you're done. Where's your letter of resignation? And and I don't mean this in a prejudiced or pejorative nature. Mm-hmm. But the man culturally holds these beliefs. And I don't, you know, you're welcome from your, for your culture to hold those beliefs. I don't think you're going to change this. I mean, this gentleman named Wasim Fayed, I'm assuming this is a religiously held belief about an anti-homosexual belief.
Could be, yeah.
And,
could be.
And I'm just assuming at this point. But if that's the case, this guy doesn't want to change his point of view on that community. This guy, and he has every right to hold his religious beliefs. We all do, right? I mean, I'm, maybe I'm wrong, but he's holding these beliefs, and he's free. He's a business owner in town, right? He's free to have that business, run it as he sees fit, make his feelings publicly known, put up signs in your restaurant, whatever you want to do, ban a pride flag in your restaurant, whatever you want to do. People will come. People will come or not to your restaurant, right?
Yeah.
But when you're on the planning commission for a community. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want his beliefs involved in the planning for that community in a mechanism that excludes LGBTQ plus people from being included in that community. He's not going to plan a gay pride center. He's not. He doesn't even want to have Pride Month, right? I mean,
you're right.
He's free to hold any job he wants to. But when you're talking about being on a planning commission for a community and to have such exclusionary views. We can teach him, and he can hopefully learn to be more inclusive. It's a melting pot. You won't have to quote Teddy Roosevelt every time the story comes up. But there are points of view that are welcome here, but not welcome as an agent of building a community of inclusion, and which is what I hope a planning commission is.
I understand. My response to that would basically be this, Mike. If you go back and you listen to the radio that I did 7 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, you will hear a transphobic bigot is what you will. If you listen to the way that I used to talk about trans people.
I'm shocked by that, knowing you you today. Yeah.
No, you will hear somebody who is just spouting off, talking anti-LGBTQ talking points like nobody's business. You will hear somebody who sounds like a righteous little bigot. And one of the things that changed the way that I approach, the way that I talk about trans people in particular, the thing that changed me about the way that I talk about my gay people in particular is that I was introduced and I made a lot more gay friends. And that drastically changed my entire position, and now my agent is gay. You know what I mean? So it's like, to me, it's no big deal. But if with trans people in particular, I was talking with my buddy Dr. Z, MD, PhD, Silver Fox, and Robot Brain, and I was I was trying to feel him out to see how he felt about the whole trans thing, because he's a neurologist. He's a child neurologist. And he says, and I'm kind of like, I don't know, I'm kind of like throwing out little pieces of chum to see if he'll take the bait.
Sure.
To see like, is this guy a transphobe like me? And so we're talking about it. And then he starts pointing me to all this literature to read, right? Like the neuroanatomy of transgender individuals, or like longitudinal studies on hormone therapy for adolescents or whatever it might be, or gender affirming care, which ranges from therapy to other interventions, whatever it might be. And so I start reading all the data, and I go, "Oh, I've been a terrible bigot. I've been horribly misled on this issue, because the general consensus around this issue scientifically is pretty sound when we're just looking at the data. Now the data is subject to change over time, but
that's what science does. Yes.
My point is that you can take people who, like, you know, I would dead name people like crazy, Spike. Like I would misuse people's pronouns. Like I didn't care. I had the worst take on it of all time. And so you can take somebody like that and you like me, and you can help that person by being kind and empathetic and not saying, well, you're a transphobe and you're a bigot and you need to leave. The problem with Wasim Fayed, this planning commissioner, is one, again, his talking points are Facebook talking points. These are not well thought out talking points. And two, they are based in nothing. They are based in nothing. So what that tells me is that he has no foundation by which he has come to these conclusions, which means that we can build one together. And that's how you improve society, right? Not by saying
you're on the money. I hope that the gentleman will keep an open mind and maybe talk to people from that community. His point about, I know a gay person who quit their job to be an activist, paid twice what they made at Microsoft.
That's probably a lie.
Really?
Probably a lie.
Because
yeah.
I'll become an activist for the gay community if it pays twice what Microsoft is paying. And that's what you base your entire perception on, that community? They're all, I mean, it sounds kind of coded for, are they running Hollywood too? I mean.
Yeah, basically. It is anti-Semitic
seriously.
Talking points that have been applied to the gay community.
Yeah.
It's pretty astounding.
And it's sad to hear somebody, I mean, again, I'm trying to be respectful of cultural differences between the culture I was raised in and perhaps mm-hmm. the culture that Mr. Fayed was raised in. I get it. You know, and when you come to America, you don't have to abandon the culture that you brought here. But it doesn't get to dictate how you live amongst our community. Our community has an inclusive standard.
But
at least now they're chipping away at it daily. But, you know,
doesn't he, though, have a seat at the table with his opinions for however much we might disagree with them? Because that perspective, for however wrong it might be, is still a perspective that a vast majority of Americans hold. Right.
That's a great. I heard the same question being asked to a different scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Are opposing viewpoints valid enough to be brought into the conversation?
Like,
for example, I was looking at a story about a college professor was arguing that anti-Holocaust points of view should be welcome in a college classroom as just another point of view. And,
sure.
And
yeah,
I don't know that I would agree with that. I'm not an educator. But I think you have to, you know, if you're going to have different opinions, you want to have a bedrock of fact. You know, I don't, and it's tough too when you're talking about what the LGBTQ community is attempting to do to our children. I mean, you can talk all day long and show example all day long to this guy. He's never going to get it that it's not a fact.
Yeah, I mean, but Spike, like, bigots want to be affirmed in their bigotry, and one of the ways that everybody is happy to oblige is to quote unquote cancel them or ostracize them, because then they get to go back to their in group and say, I was fired for speaking the truth about blah, 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 right?
But what's more, is it more dangerous, though, to let him have his seat at the table and spew this kind of messaging?
No. I mean, it's the kind of thing where, I mean, this is kind of a bad analogy, Spike, but like, is it dangerous to go around and for flat earthers to go around and spread their nonsense about the flat earth?
It's tough on globe sales. It does hurt globe sales.
But is it dangerous, right? The danger comes from when it gets to the hands or the ears of politicians who then try to enact policy.
Well,
but then what
it seems to be happening, right?
But look at what happened in Florida, my friend, where that judge, so Ron DeSantis comes out and he says, I'm going to ban gender-affirming care for minors.
Right.
And then a judge, who's a Trump appointee, by the way, comes out. Pardon me, my allergies are killing me. The Trump-appointed judge comes out and he says, yeah, no dice. Sorry, this is unconstitutional at almost every level, and I'm going to go ahead and stay that ban on trans. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
This is a process by which patience and kindness and empathy is required. And so when we have people like this guy, this is different, Spike. I'll give you an example. That equity director who was fired after the racist comment that she made.
Oh, yeah, the anti-Hispanic Mexican comments.
Yeah. So Karen Johnson, PhD, who lists her pronouns, by the way, as she, her, and beloved, which was very, very interesting, was unceremoniously fired by Governor Jay Inslee on the 17th of May. This is an article by Jason Rance over at 770 KTTH if you want to read her comments. Johnson's dismissal was on the back end of some of the, basically she had several complaints that were made against her that were kind of vague at first. It was biased and insensitive conduct. And then once you actually got into the meat of it, she's got a crazy bias against Mexican Americans.
Right. Yeah. The examples are horrific.
Right. So when you have someone like this who's saying, should we even hire somebody like this? Should we even bring in Mexican American or whatever it might be? when you're analyzing people based on the color of their skin, and it's your job to be the equity, you're the director of equity.
I mean, I was about to say the same thing about Mr. Fayed. When you are qualifying people for positions, mm-hmm. when you are a community planner, planning commissioner, shouldn't you figure out how they feel about certain members of the community before you give them the seat?
But to this equity director too. But he didn't say, I'm not going to do things for people because they're gay. She said, I'm not going to do things for people because they're Mexican.
I'm not going to. Yeah, that, she did directly say
that.
True,
that
true.
Is a right. So those are two different conversations. And what we've done now is we've lumped them together and we've said that those are equivalent in their weight and in their bigotry. And they're not. What's her name? Karen Johnson is the Led Zeppelin of bigotry, whereas Wasim Fayed is like the big star of bigotry. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I don't know, man. I think he's got rooted belief, and he's the. I'm trying to find the right. I'm trying not to be insulting. he's the Waylon Jennings of bigotry, man. Because he's old school. He's old school bigotry.
But there's a huge difference here between the way that we can approach Wasim versus the way that we can approach Karen. Which, by the way, unfortunate coincidence, right? About her name.
Yeah. Seriously. Before we move on, a texter pointed out these arguments against promoting disease and in the community and all those things.
Yeah.
Same thing was said about the African-American community not that long ago.
Same thing said about Jews. I mean, Hitler used to say he said that they were dirty people and so on and so forth.
And we just don't have any place at the table for that kind of point of view in America, man. We shouldn't, anyway.
I think we do. It's just at the far end of the table where we all try to be. It's at the kids' table. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The ones who aren't allowed to have sharp tools and they're eating with a spork. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so they can't hurt themselves or others.
We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to be playing a fun game because everybody knows how I feel about the COVID vaccine mandates, but I shall be arguing on the opposite side of the spectrum in our fun segment that we call The Devil's Advocate, coming up when we get right back. So Washington State is facing more than a dozen lawsuits involving at least 180 ex-employees who allege they were unjustly forced from their jobs after asserting religious or other objections to receiving the vaccines. Currently 12:33, we like to play a fun game called Devil's Advocate, right, where I will be advocating on a position that I do not agree with. Right, Spike? It's a pretty fun game, right? It's a good mental exercise, I think, to take the position that you normally don't hold so that you can argue in good faith and in good conscience the position that other people might hold about vaccines and the people who were forced from their jobs.
Yep. It's an intellectual high wire act above a tank of piranhas.
While
wearing someone else's moccasins.
Well, and also it's just boring. I mean, how many times do I have to say I feel like these people should get their jobs back and they shouldn't have been forced to get, you know what I mean? Like,
no, I hear you.
I make the same argument every time it comes up. So today we shall be playing a different version of that. And Bob Rivers was kind enough to make us an intro that fits the dark and macabre nature of this particular segment. Ooh. It's pretty dark. It definitely fits the aesthetic of devils and Satan and whatnot. Andrew, would you mind firing off what Bob Rivers made for us?
Playing the devil's advocate, Jack Stein.
Oh my God. The horror of 1972 rears its ugly head again. What the hell?
All right. So let us begin.
Through a transistor radio held to the microphone?
I don't know. I think it's because we copied it and copied it and copied it, and then the quality of it just died. And then so I'll have to send the original to Andrew.
It's the Satan Singers with you.
All right. So Spike will be asking me, Jack Stein, the questions about why I feel as if these people have no case against the state. And so, Spike, if you would please begin.
Sure, Jack. Baron von Inslee, in his infinite wisdom of executive power, decided that it was his way or the highway. And people who held scientifically backed or religiously based beliefs that they shouldn't trust an unproven vaccination were forced out of their careers. Mm-hmm. Why do they deserve? Why do they deserve anything?
Well, they. I think you set me up.
I set you up in the wrong direction. I stuck to my. I tried to go against my beliefs. I'm sorry. I was trying to give the other side. I was trying to also play devil. I was so wrapped up in that jingle. I just wanted to play the devil's advocate. Okay, Jack, here's the deal. These folks were told that there was a rule, a state rule, and many judges have said that rule was legal. Why should they be entitled to anything?
Well, they're not entitled to anything because those judges are correct in their assessment because the thing about the vaccines, Spike, that we all know is that they were safe and effective for everybody. And of course, the state has the ability to come in and regulate your medical health care, despite what your doctor might have to say about it, right? I mean, this just makes sense. So nobody should have gotten any religious exemptions because the Bible doesn't talk about vaccines. And nobody should have gotten any doctor because most if anything, the people who got a doctor's note, they should have had to gone to a state doctor because there's only one doctor that I listen to. And that's Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is the most doctor of any doctor of all time. And him and Deborah Birx and Rochelle Walensky are fine and capable physicians with media savvy. And we should just, quote unquote, trust the science. As they told us, and these people are incorrect in their assessment. I'm going to accuse these people of being bad faith. Like,
ooh.
These people are, they don't really think that there's such a thing as a vaccine injury. Things like Guillain-Barré syndrome, which, you know, medically is recommended that people don't get further vaccines after they have that kind of palsy. That is all made up. That's not real science. And
but Jack, other states allowed for accommodations like, say, remote work, if you didn't want to come into the office and take a vaccine.
You got to be in the office. Too bad. You got to be in the office. Because you got when a face-to-face interaction, Spike, is important, okay? And these people should know that you can't – those accommodations are – they're perpetuating the virus, you understand? When people don't get – they don't go out and get the vaccine, which is clinically proven to be 100% safe and effective – that they are literally literally killing children at that point in time, and I have no sympathy for you because, as we all know, according to the data, children are the most susceptible to COVID-19. And
one of the complainants in this case seeking tort reform or seeking tort relief is a 25-year veteran of the State Patrol, a young, healthy, strapping picture of health, who said, "I would never have put my health at risk. Why do I need to be fired because I won't take the governor's this vaccine?"
Well, because when you're a police officer, you are a model of behavior for other citizens, which is why we never see police officers speeding or drinking and driving, never getting into domestic disputes and never breaking the law, right? Because they are models of behavior. And so they should have gotten the vaccine as a show to bring in the people who were less confident about the effectiveness of the vaccine, because as we all know, that has been repeated many, many times. It is 100% safe and effective. And anybody who says otherwise is the misinformed about the data and the science, which is extensive and vast.
The state is sorry. The state has a shortage of state troopers, nurses, psychiatrists, mental health counselors, bank regulators, fish biologists, Jack. We don't have enough fish biologists. Shouldn't these people be able to sue and get their jobs back and fill the state's empty roles?
Well, you know, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, so the answer is no, because we got to bring the amount of money that the state spends down, and this is a good safety. This is a peripheral effect, right? So we're saving money by having a shortage of positions that we need. This makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense from a budget standpoint why this is the case. And also, as a police officer, you're literally interfacing with potentially dozens of people a day. And as we all know, according to the science, the vaccine does not it halts 100% halts the transmission of your viral load, contrary to what literally hundreds of other studies say about the vaccines. So this is the real fact of the matter here, is that those people shouldn't be around people anyway. And in reality, Spike, we should be treating the unvaccinated treated like how we treat TB lady. They should be in
casinos, ankle bracelets.
No casinos, ankle bracelets. They should be in negative pressure rooms because until they agree to become vaccinated, because the state has the ability to literally take away everything from you capriciously based on razor thin data. They have the ability to do that. Anybody who says otherwise is an insane person, and that's what I'm saying about that. So, I think we're done. I think I can argue.
I was going to try now.
Well, how about like
Devil's Advocate, Jack Stein.
And I apologize. I totally backed you down an alley starting this whole thing off.
I couldn't
wrap my head around the other side of this argument.
Did I do a good job representing?
Yeah, you sound like me on any given day of the week. You did great. You were awesome. You were just awesome.
Was that good? Did I play a good devil's advocate?
I think
there
people are already calling you a liberal online, you know, and I think that just confused everyone. And people are hammering or half listening to the show. Now everybody's really
crazy,
really confused.
Somebody standing with a highway sign needs to be triple vaxxed. What?
To people that are, this is the funniest thing to me. When people that are, it's like a game that we play.
Yeah.
It is in a short segment, and then people go. They hear one piece of information that I don't believe in, but I'm playing a fun game, and they're like, oh, "I'm upset." It's like it's funny to me.
Hey, just to clear the air before we move on, right?
Yeah, these folks.
Some of these folks have already lost lawsuits, and they're suing again.
Yeah, no, they should all be, if they lost their job as a result of the mandates, I do think that they deserve compensation, if not their jobs back, based on the data. And I really do feel as if Inslee was overstepping in so many ways when he, even though it's the court has repeatedly upheld Inslee's authority to enforce the vaccine mandate, I don't agree with the court's position on this,
mm-hmm.
given that there are many people out there who have legitimate reasons for not getting vaccinated, and those concerns needed to have been heard rather than just dismissed outright.
And I got to tell you, you turned me around on this issue. I now think these people should be reinstated, compensated with lost pay, reinstated to seniority status, and fill the damn roles on our ferry systems and our snow plows and on the highway crews. All these people that were out and about in the sunshine and were safe.
Yeah. That's my position on it. All right, we'll take a really quick break. When we get back, there is a tiny home along the Columbia River that is out of this world. And am I a bad person for not being a fan of it? We shall discuss when we get back right after this. This is an article in the Seattle Times. Talking about a tiny home along the Columbia River, and it is basically a recreation of the lunar lander, which it seems like this guy Kurt Hughes put a lot of time and a lot of effort into making this little teeny tiny home, right? It's on land that his mom bought way back in the day for like $10, which, you know, in today's money is about $100, and now it's worth a pretty decent chunk of change. And one of the things that's kind of cool about it, this little lunar lander, is it's a replica. It's only 250 square feet. It's suspended above the ground. It looks really cool. Spike, am I a bad person for thinking that it's not cool? I mean, I feel like I should be interested in this kind of novelty. And the amount of time that he put into this and the amount of effort, it is really an amazing feat. But I, at the same time, am I a bad person for not being interested?
It's not my cup of tea either, Jack. I don't know what to say about it because I feel bad too. Here's a guy who's, you know, this guy was, he's about my age, so he was he was a boy in elementary school when they landed on the moon.
So cool.
You know, and that was a captivating moment for a whole generation of Americans, the last of the boomers, you know, but when you've got a piece of land on the Columbia River and this view is, you know, it's a multi-million dollar view. Let's build a steel box that's the size of an outhouse, and you got no windows. And what I mean, like, there are so many things I would do with this little piece of heaven.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, it's like, you know, I'm living inside of a Coke can.
Yeah.
At the beach, I'd rather live in the sand. Good on him that he can fulfill a childhood dream.
Yeah.
You know,
isn't
but
that so cool? But is it,
too
but
bad
is
he didn't dream
cool?
of being Daniel Boone, you know, where he could actually enjoy nature or something.
Chris, are you into tiny homes? My mom's into tiny homes. Are you into tiny homes?
I think I will be eventually. I'll be into one. Yeah, I think it could be kind of cool. The main thing is where to put all my records. I have a zillion.
Right. So this is the thing about my mom is you guys know my mom lives way out in the cuts in the middle of nowhere with her horses. So she's got a bunch of horses that she trains and she watches, and other people pay my mom to basically train and exercise their horses because they're too wealthy to do. You know, they have to go to Trinidad and Tobago. Who watch our Arabians while we're away? I know. Let's get Jill to do it. So my mom. But she lives in what is basically a tiny home. I mean, the thing's got to be maybe 600 or 700 square feet.
Yeah.
And she's always like, come out and stay at my house, which is like basically like, hey, why don't you come out and stay in there's no room.
And sleep in your car. Come on over and sleep in your car, Jack.
And I'm always like, oh, yeah, I was like, you know, Mom, I'll tell you what, if I come visit you, I will get a hotel. And she's like, but my house is so nice. But the truth of the matter is like, it's not. A tiny home it's nice for a human being.
Yes.
My mom is a dwarf. My mom is about 5'5", I think, or like 5'6". Yeah. So she's walking around. She's like a Keebler elf. She's having the time of her life. And I'm in there. I'm 5'11". I weigh about 180 pounds, and I'm ripped out of my mind on steroids. So when I walk around, I'm bumping into things.
Yeah.
I'm you know, sitting down. Everything is tiny. Like, the chairs are tiny. The beds are tiny. The plates are tiny. So I look like Andre the Giant in her home, and it's a miserable experience for me. This guy's got – his lunar lander is only 250 square feet. I don't see how that could be in any way, shape, or form – enjoyable, and the view is amazing, and he put so much. It should be cool, but to me, it's just like, I don't know, Kurt Hughes. You have to convince me that this is based. You know, yeah, what I mean?
I hear you, man. And good on him. He followed his dream all the way to the wet side of the moon. Apparently, there's a river right there. And, you know, that's not my dream. So I feel like you do. I feel like, man, what a wasted opportunity to spend. He probably spent $100,000 plus, right?
100 grand plus, and it took about 4 years, 4 years to put it together.
I mean, give me half that side of wood, some really nice, triple pane windows. You're going to be entertaining out there on the river, my friend.
Andrew, are you a tiny house guy or not so much?
I can't say I haven't been tempted by it, but I'm more of a moto camper kind of guy, where if I can't fit it on a motorcycle, I like fitting stuff on a motorcycle and going out. That's my jam. Tiny house just seems like here is just a... You might as well get one of those pop-up trailer things, you know?
Yeah.
Like one of those little... Yeah. What do they call it? That's what they're called, right?
A pop-up tent. Tent trailer, yeah.
Have you guys seen on Amazon now you can buy a tiny house for $49,000?
Yeah, complete build-it-yourself tiny house. And they're well-organized. I mean, they're roomy for how much square footage they're giving you.
Yeah, they're two stories, and they look pretty nice. I mean, it's $49,000. I mean... you're talking to a guy that was thinking about going anti-vax so that he could afford a $30,000 guitar. So maybe I should go anti-vax so I can buy
a nice custom guitar. Hey, you know what's cool though? The story from the Times that has Craig's tiny house on here. There's a QR code because he gets a ton of drive-bys. He's right off the freeway, and his freeway runs along the river, and he loves showing it off to people.
I would too, telling kids about
the moon landing. He's got a QR code on the house itself. And if you look at the Times story, I actually just checked it. The QR code can work on, you can bring it up on your phone and get the whole history of this guy's little house. And
help him.
Yeah, I'm happy for him too. It wouldn't have been my bread and butter. I would have done something a little different.
Yeah.
You ever see those tents where they pop up and there's like a feather bed inside? It's like glamping, they call it. I'd rather do that on the side of the road.
I would have rebuilt the General Lee from the Dukes of Hazzard, but have it been like 3,500 square feet. So
General Lee. The old rebel flag on the roof and everything.
All right. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. The presidential race for 2024 is heating up 18 months in advance and a full year before we vote for anything. Find out the new candidates, what they stand for, and who's booing them when we get back right after this.